We really got a special night tonight by having Brother Park Linscomb with us to speak for us. Park graduated from Lubbock Christian College maybe a little over 50 years ago, I would guess. But I imagine most of the Bible majors at Lubbock Christian, when they graduated, stayed in Texas or stayed west of the Mississippi. But Park was one who chose to go to Manchester, Massachusetts. I'm sorry, Manchester, New Hampshire, get it straight, and stayed there and preached for 46 years. He's now preaching for the Rock Hill Church since the year 2000, just up the road. But I appreciate a man like Park and his wife Linda and the work that they did there. Park was a very strong influence in the Brotherhood in the Northeast, a sought-after speaker in that area. He's been a guest missionary, I believe, at Harding at times, many different occasions for that, but a very strong example of a man dedicated to preaching the gospel in a place that's not quite as easy to do as we have it here, of course, here in Texas, especially in the Metroplex. But I've known Park for over 20 years because him and Linda had reason to travel here. Park and Linda's son Adam and his wife Mary were members here maybe since, 2002 or three. So it was always good to see them as they would come down to visit the grandson. So appreciate Adam and his family as well. And they are Red Sox fans. Park inbred that into Adam. So they are took on the culture as they lived up there. But Park, we're certainly thankful you had this occasion to be with us this evening. We look forward to your message.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to participate in this summer series. Here at McDermott Road, there's a great tradition of good, sound Bible teaching, and I'm just really pleased to be able to participate in this summer series that is focused on growing deeper, which of course ends up, I don't know, implying that we do want to grow, that keeping the status quo, keeping things just as they are, is really not what the Lord wants and desires of us, but it's something that we need to be constantly choosing to and making attempts at growing. So we need to, in our lives, be challenged with such lessons and such series as we're going to be looking at this evening. And this evening in particular, we are taking a look at deeper submission. Now, submission, as I'm sure you're probably well aware, is almost sort of a dirty word, I think, in our culture to some degree. Having done a lot of premarital counseling over the years, I've watched many a prospective bride really kind of, squirm and seek a different word in her wedding vows, anything but submit. And in fact, because of the fact that we are living in a democratic culture, born out of a revolution, as a matter of fact, we really chafe at the idea of submitting to anyone, demanding our rights and our freedoms. We want that so bad. But here's the thing. Submission is a biblical word and a biblical concept. It's coming out of a kingdom culture and not a democratic culture. And we are commanded, in fact, to submit to God's rule, authority, and commands, and his way of life. And as Christians, we, of course, all know this. I mean, we know it up here, right? And we like to think of ourselves as being submissive to the King of Kings, and yet, here we are, talking about having a deeper submission this evening, which implies that perhaps there might be another whole level that perhaps we might and should be aspiring to. And to that end, we're going to be taking a look at an Old Testament story. Now, Old Testament stories, the Apostle Paul says, are there for our instruction. We're told that actually twice. One of them happens to be 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And the story that we're going to be taking a look at specifically comes out of 2 Kings chapter 5. Now, for the purposes of time, I'm not going to be asking you all to read along with me the story. It's a great story. I would encourage you to read that story because you'll probably pick up some details and so forth that I'll not be able to actually touch on all that much. But it's a great story, and it's one in specific that is the basis for submitting ourselves to a deeper submission. The story of Naaman is one that starts off with Naaman being an Aramean military general, really is what he was. From as far as we can tell, he was like maybe the king's top general. He was someone who was very well looked up to by everyone. And yet, despite the fact that he was successful as a general, despite the fact that he had the respect of the king, despite the fact that he obviously had enormous amounts of wealth, we'll get into that in just a moment, despite the fact that he had everything else, he did have this one thing kind of going against him. He was a leper. Well, it happened to, because of the raids that the Arameans frequently made down toward Israel, he had an Israelite girl as a slave. And the Israelite girl apparently appreciated her master a great deal. And so she happened to mention to her mistress, the wife of Naaman, that it would surely be a wonderful thing if only my master could go and visit the prophet and be healed of his leprosy. So this gets back to Naaman. And Naaman, because he has leprosy and because of the fact that it's a dreaded disease and you can actually ultimately die from it and so forth, he's seeking any way he can to get rid of this leprosy, and so he goes to the king. Then he asks permission and asks for a letter, too, by the way, from the Aramean king, if he can go and ask to see the prophet and be healed of his leprosy. So, with permission and a letter from the Aramean king, and by the way, about $5 million in silver, gold, and clothing going along with him, he actually does go into the capital of Israel, Samaria, and there he presents the letter to the king. The letter that the Aramean king had given to him reads this way, "And now, as this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may cure him of his leprosy." Now, that's a letter that probably could have been written better. And because it was written that way, the king of Israel actually believes that the king of Aram was really just looking to come pick a fight. In fact, the king actually said, the king of Israel says, am I God to make alive and to kill? That this man is sending word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? But consider now, see how he is seeking a quarrel against me. But because the king is so upset, he's actually torn his clothes. And the whole town, or the whole city of Samaria is now all upset about things. Word apparently makes its way back to Elisha, who apparently is either living in the city of Samaria or very close to it. And Elisha, hearing that Naaman has come, says, "Tell you what, why don't you send him my way?" Sends word, "Send the man to me." And so Naaman, in fact, does end up going to Elisha's house. And there he ends up being, and this is kind of where things start getting a little bit, I don't know, I guess you could say weird from Naaman's point of view. Here's where Naaman starts to learn a little bit about how to submit. Because you see, first of all, Elisha, instead of actually coming out and greeting this man of tremendous importance, here was a man who was like, I don't know that you could say he was second in command, but he certainly was a very powerful man. He was a military man. He was a man of great wealth. And usually if you're going to greet someone, you're going to go out yourself and say, "Hey, how you doing? Welcome," and all that sort of stuff. But instead of that, Elisha sends out a messenger. Now, what was probably being expected beyond that, beyond the fact that Elisha was really supposed to come out himself and greet him, What Naaman was also expecting was perhaps that Elisha was going to come out and do a bunch of stuff with his hands or whatever. Archaeologically, there's a lot of base reliefs and that kind of stuff of various people doing some sort of healing thing and calling upon the gods. And normally, they're all in this position. You have to have your hands raised, your elbows like that, and your palms towards you. And then you end up calling upon the gods, and then you say some sort of a I don't know, a magical spell or something like that, and you put your hands over the place that needs to be healed, and then, boom, theoretically, you get healed. But this is not at all what happens with Naaman. Instead, as I mentioned before, out comes the servant and says, here's what you do. You need to go to the River Jordan, and you need to dip 7 times in the River Jordan. Now, Naaman, because Elisha had not come out, and because Elisha had not come out and waved his hands over the spot and done all the usual things, incantations and whatever else, he hadn't done any of that stuff. Naaman is like really upset about this and thinks to himself, well, this is just kind of really stupid. I thought the prophet would come out and wave his hand over the leprosy and make me clean. And in fact, by the way, you're wanting me to go and dip in the Jordan River? Listen, I come from Syria. That's basically what Aram is. I come from Syria, and there's a lot of much cleaner rivers that are there. You want me to go dip in that old nasty Jordan River? And you can kind of see his point. On the left side here is the Abana River near Damascus. It's nice and flowing. It's nice and clear. Everything is great. On the right is the Jordan River, kind of muddy, kind of slow going. You know, he's probably thinking, look, I want to be clean when I come out, not dirtier. But he doesn't really understand. He goes off in a fit of rage. He has no intention of turning around, and yet, fortunately, there was a servant who reasons with him and says, listen, if the prophet had asked you to do some great thing, would you not have done that great thing? Think about all the things that Elisha could have possibly asked him to do. Elisha could have, because he's a military man, he could have said, I want you to go and take care of Israel's enemies over here. You go take that town, I will heal you. He could have been, I don't know, he could have told him to do anything. He could have said, give me all your money. Remember, he had like $5 million plus. He could have said anything. And if he had asked some great thing of you, wouldn't you have gladly done it in order to be cleansed of your leprosy? Well, that does make some sense. Why not give this a try? And so it is that Naaman, and here's the turning point for the story, Naaman decides to submit. And he goes ahead and he does go to the Jordan River. Because you see, submission is something that's important, and this is really important to understand. Submission is also about obedience. It's not enough to simply say, well, I feel submissive to so-and-so, or I feel submissive to God, I feel submissive to my government. But the real test is whether you obey. And Naaman obeys. He makes the trip of like some 20 or 30 miles to the River Jordan, and there, in that muddy old river, he dips 7 times. And as he does so, at the 7th time when he comes up, his flesh is restored perfectly, just like a little child's. Well, he returns back to Elisha's house now, and he is clean, and he is, can you imagine, he's probably singing all the way from Jordan River. You know, he's just having a great time jumping up and down, and he's ready, by the way, the scripture tells it very clearly, he's ready to give him his entire treasure, some $5 million worth of gold, silver, and clothing. But interestingly enough, Elisha refuses the treasure. Now, there's several reasons why it is that Elisha is kind of dealing with things this way. It's primarily because, you see, Elisha wanted to make sure that Naaman got the idea, the very clear idea and concept, that all of this is from the God of Israel. It's not in the prophet Elisha who could come out and wave his hands over the wound or the leprosy. And it's not because you're giving all this treasure away. How much treasure does God really need? It is because of God's grace and because of his great power that you are now healed of your leprosy. Well, this again kind of goes completely against what Naaman was expecting. But you know what? By this point, he was starting to kind of get it. And he does more than simply submit himself to dipping in the Jordan River. He now submits himself and demonstrates further submission by conversion. He says, okay, you won't take my money? Then please do me a favor. Allow me to take a couple of mules worth of dirt, Israelite dirt, with me back to my place in Aramea. Because there, you see, I want to be able to build an altar, because I now believe that the God of Israel is in fact the only God. There isn't any other God in all the earth. Now, this was a big statement for a pagan. Because you see, in the pagan notion of things, you might have, there would be in fact a God over Israel, just like there was a God over Aram, just like there was a God over Babylon, just like there was a God or gods over Greece. But they were all kind of confined to their territory. But read the scriptures again and find out what he says, that there is only one God. There aren't any other gods. He is the God of all the earth. And I want to make sure that I have an opportunity to worship him. Now, this really does kind of go back to some ideas about, again, having the need to have some of the land, as it were, that belongs to the God of all the earth. And so I could get into all that stuff, but it'd take up too much time. But the point, at least, is very simply this. Here's a man who is pagan, who had now converted, even asked permission. He says, you know what? Listen, here's the deal. When I go back to my master, the king of Aram, he's going to be wondering why it is that I'm not necessarily a big follower of Rimmon. It was the god of Aram. And yet, I know there's really only one God. I want to ask permission and ask forgiveness, that whenever the king wants me to go into the temple of Rimmon, and he bows before the god Rimmon, and he kind of, you know, forces me to bow before, listen, I want you to understand and realize, I want the God of Israel to understand and realize, I am not bowing down in submission to him. Because I know there's really only one God. Well, now, the story does go on and talks about the servant Gehazi and how it is that after Naaman leaves, Gehazi says, well, if Elisha doesn't want some of that $5 million, I could use a few nickels. So he goes and he, you know, tries to get some and ultimately ends up getting leprosy for his efforts. But that's really kind of beyond what we're trying to really focus on this evening, which is submission. So what is it really that we can learn about submission and deeper submission, as a matter of fact, as we're taking a look at all of this? Well, first of all, it is important to keep in mind and to realize that there are some very definite obstacles to submission, and we need to realize what they are. The very first one I'd like to mention very simply is the fact that sometimes, in fact, most of the time, God's ways actually look a little on the counterintuitive side. It certainly had obstacles for Naaman. When God's way looked pretty odd to Naaman, it actually at first kind of turned him off, right? He didn't really want to do it because this was just too weird. It was counterintuitive. It wasn't at all what he was expecting. And really, that's the way that God's way oftentimes looks. It's not what we would have guessed, not what our worldly wisdom would have come up with. You know, Naaman was expecting the prophet to come and wave his hand over the leprosy and heal it, or wash perhaps in cleaner rivers. And today, the world is full of all kinds of accepted wisdom that's really wrong, religiously, marriage and family-wise, even with regard to sexual morality. And two, in the category of God's way being counterintuitive, it oftentimes God's way looks illogical. And submission actually ends up becoming then a test of our faith. When God says, do that, and it doesn't look logical, do that, and it doesn't look intuitive, it's not what we would have expected, it turns out to be something of a test of faith. You ever been there? Read something in the Bible, perhaps, and thought to yourself, why? Something perhaps that might fly in the face of current cultural trends, issues like gender roles or instruments in worship. To some people, reading about baptism, which is kind of a parallel to Naaman's story, right? For forgiveness of sins. just doesn't quite seem right. It's not what they would have expected. And paradoxically, think about these things. Jesus ended up saying in John chapter 8, verse 31, "Abide in my words, and then you know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Abide in my words, and you get freedom. That's on the paradoxical side. Or love your enemies. Really? Pray for your persecutors. Really? Die to yourself so you can live eternally. I don't know. Be humble to be exalted. These things don't seem logical to the worldly mind, but they're God's way. And no matter how counterintuitive or logical they might seem, we need to submit to them. But you know, sometimes God's way is even worse than counterintuitive. Sometimes we might view it as just plain crazy. There's plenty of examples of all that in the Old Testament, right? Here, you've got the Egyptian army behind you. You've got the Red Sea in front of you. So what are you going to do? Walk into the Red Sea? Really? That just seems a little on the crazy side. Or how about walk into the Jordan River at flood stage? Or how about walk around the city of Jericho and shout when you're prompted? Or step out of the boat and walk on the water? Or feed a multitude with a little boy's snack? Really? Well, that's just crazy. But modern examples might be, I don't know, missionaries that leave a comfortable position to put themselves and their family in a precarious financial position and have faith in God. Or giving sacrificially. But you know what? There's also one other obstacle that stands in the way of our submission. And that is that I frequently want my own way. Naaman was rich and a successful general in the army of the Aramean king. He was used to having his own way about different things, and when things didn't go as expected, he got angry and started to ride away. But you know what? That problem is not just Naaman's. That problem is frequently our own. Getting past our own pride and willfulness is absolutely crucial to submission. Voluntarily getting off the throne and trusting in the God who loves me, trusting that He has my best interests at heart, and He therefore is worthy of my submission to Him. And in connection with this, we need to also realize that we ourselves really cannot dictate the way and the method of receiving blessings. Yes, in Naaman's world, there was a way in which getting the blessing of healing was usually done. We've already talked about it before. Naaman expected the prophet to do what all the other pagan prophets did, come out, wave his hands and so forth over the infected place and say the magical words that would compel the gods to heal, and then pay him, and then move on. That was what was expected. But not this time. And Naaman could not dictate the method of healing. Now, the modern world in which we live has a lot of their own presumed methods for receiving the blessings of, well, goodness and righteousness and functionality and so on and so forth. For example, they like to think that they have the method that works for receiving the blessings of happy, functional homes with well-adjusted children. Well, of course, you end up following the latest influencer on Facebook or TikTok or whatever else it happens to be, right? Or perhaps you pattern your family after the Modern Family on TV. Or perhaps the Gilmore Girls because you really want to be a friend to your child. Or maybe you read Dr. Spock a lot. But that's not necessarily the way to a functional family and a good marriage. The modern world has a presumed method for receiving the blessings of peace and harmony in the world between nations and religions. It's done, the world thinks, through compromising what's right and wrong and trying to make everyone happy. The world in which we live has a presumed method for receiving the blessings of less anxiety and worthy. Just give me enough pills, Or give me enough vacation time. That'll fix everything. The world around us has a presumed way of getting the blessings of heaven. Think of some of the more popular ways in which the world around us says that you can get to heaven. Just believe in something. Doesn't matter what. Just believe in something. Or just do enough good works. Or just don't do anything like really historically bad. You know what I'm saying? And all that sounds great. All these presumed pieces of wisdom for obtaining the wisdom of God, or I'm sorry, the blessings of God, sound pretty good. But are they true? That's the big question. The truth is, only God can dictate the method for receiving these blessings. Only submission to God's way receives the blessings of healing. Only God's way will lead to happy, functional families. Only following God's way will lead to peace and harmony in the world. Only following God's way will lead to less anxiety and worry. Only following God's way will lead us to heaven. But then, there's an interesting turn here. Once Naaman submitted and found cleansing, he demonstrated an even deeper submission. And it is the deeper submission that we're especially interested in this evening. Here's the frequent problem. We may submit ourselves only to matters that we agree with. And I think it's really important for us to understand that there's a big difference between agreeing with God's will and obeying God's will, submitting to it. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. We might all say, yeah, murder's pretty bad. I shouldn't do that, and you shouldn't either. We may say, yeah, lying and stealing, that's pretty bad, and I shouldn't do it, and you shouldn't do it. I agree with that. But then, yes, loving others is right, and I will do that as long as they are civil to me. Or do I really have to do what's right when it would have negative effects on me? Or do I really have to endure suffering? And there's the rub. We can deceive ourselves into believing, in fact, that we are obedient and we are submissive to the Lord when the truth is, we really are only agreeing with Him. And there is a difference. The real test, you see, is when we obey and submit when we don't want to. Think about Jesus in Gethsemane. Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. Submission. Deep submission. Or consider the Apostle Paul as he, before he was even baptized into Christ, heard, for I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake. Boy, there's a real, come on and get baptized kind of a line, right? Let me show you how much you're going to have to suffer. Naaman submitted deeper. He, of course, as I mentioned before, said, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except the God of Israel. Let your servant at least be given 2 mules load of earth, for your servant will no longer offer burnt offering, nor will he sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. The blessings of the first submission, you see, led him to deeper submission to the one true God. Naaman's conversion was going to be going against the flow at home. He was even taking a chance with a king who worshipped Rimmon. But the observed blessing and grace of the God of Israel led Naaman to a deeper submission. And it will do the same also for us. Romans chapter 12, verse 2. You might actually be able to quote some of this with me. It says, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so you may prove, and this is the part I wanted to get to, so you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. What Paul is saying there, among other things, is that there is a growing aspect to our spirituality, including our deepening submission. You see, the transformation that he's talking about includes submission to God's will. And it's done, he says, by the renewing of the mind, taking on a different sort of mind. That is, first of all, humility before God, understanding that he is greater than I am and I am his creature, and realizing also that his love and grace for me, having my best interest at heart, makes it possible for me to endure and obey and submit to anything. Don't know if you've ever thought about it before, in Exodus chapter 24, the leaders of Israel join in a special meal establishing covenant between God and Israel. And in verse 7, they say, "All that the Lord has spoken we will do, and we will be obedient." And in verse 8, the blood of the covenant sacrifice was sprinkled on them, and Moses said, "Behold, the blood of the covenant." Now fast forward a couple thousand years, and I'm sure you've noticed that the cup of the Lord's Supper is described by the Lord himself as the new covenant in my blood. Now this cup is rich with meaning, but one of those meanings is a remembrance of Christ's love and grace towards us to cause us to say with the leaders of Israel, "All the Lord has spoken we will do, and we will be obedient to submission." We need deeper submission. And part of the Lord's Supper is to remember that. Obeying, submitting to the will of God comes by seeing in our own experience all that God has said is really what's good for us and benefits us. As we observe how good God has been, it deepens our willingness to submit to his great will. Now, I haven't got time to go into great detail about how submitting to God's will can also bring opposition, trial, and trouble. I think we all know that it probably can, right? Witness the prophets, the Apostle Paul, and Jesus himself. But the short-term trouble still results in long-term blessings and glory. So here's the challenge. Submit to God's rules for your life and find healing for your family and our society at large. Watch how things get better when you do. Submit to God's plan and purpose for your life, finding healing for hectic, discontented lives, and observe the peace, the shalom that it brings. Submit to God's laws, finding an unexpected freedom and healing for the moral confusion, contradictions, hatred, divisions, and more. And watch how things improve. Submit to God's plan for salvation, finding true healing for your soul's dread disease of sin and death, and feel the true forgiveness. Submit to God's command to love and find healing for fractured families and nations and churches, and watch things become more united. Submit to God's patterns for the church, finding healing for the divisions denominationally and even in our brotherhood, and then watch love and true unity grow. And then as you take that challenge and observe the healing, you will find a more willing heart to submit deeper in obedience even to commands that you've resisted before, in stepping out of the boat in faith, even to trial, because you're assured that all things work together for good for those that love God. You'll submit even to suffering, and even when submission results in my own disadvantage or hurt. Let us all seek a deeper submission to the King of Kings, the Creator of the universe, regardless of whether the world believes it to be odd, regardless of whether the world deems it to be crazy, regardless of whether it contradicts our own wishes, desires, and will, because you see, deeper submission results in deeper blessings, deeper understanding of truth, deeper hope, deeper faith, deeper assurance, greater treasure in heaven, and a brighter, truer light in the dark world around us. And more than just deepen, let us seek complete submission to the one true and living God. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. I really do hope that you will all give some great thought to submitting yourself to the mighty hand of God, as James chapter 4 talks about, so that in our lives we can all one day hear the wonderful words, "Well done, good and faithful servant."